Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform life.
Good morning again, and Happy New Year. And I hope that many of you have had a good week celebrating with your family and friends this year. Let me grab the clicker. This year, Chinese New Year has definitely been more festive for me. I was really glad to have my sister and her family around, as well as my Aunt Agnes. All my family and my aunt actually lives overseas. So I'm really glad to be able to celebrate with them after this Chinese New Year with my parents and I. Especially after not being able to see them in person for 3 years or more. So it's been a really good week for me. I've had also other visitors from overseas. I don't know why they've all decided to come this week. So it's been up and down as I also prepare for the sermon. Just before I begin, can I have the slides? Is the clicker working? Clicker. Yeah, it was on. It's on. Okay, cool. Okay, a number of you have asked me since I last shared, I think in end of November, about what's going on with me and what's happening with me joining a ship. So I thought I'll just slip this in a little bit before we begin the sermon. So just to update you on my personal timeline in joining the Doulos Hope, by end of February, in about 4 weeks' time, I'll be stepping down as PJEFC executive pastor. And at the moment, I'm doing a lot of handover with Pastor Melissa, who's taking over most of my roles. This is followed by, in March, I'll be doing, I plan to do ships preparation. There's still lots to do, whether it's vaccination required by the ship, passport, I need to renew it, and raising support, packing, and so on and so forth. So lots to do in March as well. And then I'll be joining in April 2023, still deciding between mid and end, though this week they just called me to ask if I can join at the beginning. And I'll be doing HR for them, plus developing crews and leaders on board. I mentioned a four-person cabin, and this is kind of how it looks like. It's not very big. Most cabin on this ship is about four person. There's very few two, and I was told the two is even much smaller than the four. So you can pray for me. Actually, the Doulos Hope schedule is, they're scheduled to actually arrive in Penang this week on 30th of January for what they call the technical stop. So they're still in the midst of revamping a lot of the ship and preparing it to be ready for ministry in April, which is when I'll be joining them. Okay. And then they hope to actually, I was told just this week by a friend that they hope to actually from Penang travel down to Port Klang, and from Port Klang go to East Malaysia, Kuching and Kota Kinabalu before going to Singapore in August for the official launch. So maybe I'll be able to host a number of you in Port Klang if you're free when the ship is there. Okay. I would ask that if you would like to pray for me in this time, can you pray for good health, as well as preparations to all be done by end of March. I'm a little bit nervous because there's still heaps to do, and I feel it's a little bit of a miracle to get everything done by the end of March at this point. Do let me know if you'd like to support me financially or to support my ministry by prayer. And or to even if you like to meet up with me for a drink or a meal in any time, February or March, some of you have already started messaging me. Do send me a WhatsApp, and I would be really happy to be able to catch up with you or even update you about how you can support me as well. Thank you for those of you who have already reached out or already given. I must say you've been such an encouragement because there have been tough times even as I prepare and I was going, God, should I still really go? And I think And sometimes God has just sent someone to say, hey, can I have a meal with you? Or, hey, you know, I really feel God is leading me to give to your ministry. And that's been just such an encouragement to me, or just a confirmation that I should still keep going. So thank you for that. Okay, that's the update from me. So today we are going to go into the sermon, What is Your Name? Based on Mark 5, verse 9. And this is taken from the whole passage of Mark 5, verse 1 to 20. Before I continue, since most of you weren't here last week, do you remember what was the question for last week? Why are you afraid? Good job. Okay, so you all remember. It was Reverend Alexa preached on why are you afraid. And do you remember what the story was about? Reverend Alexa's listening to you all. Okay, it was about Jesus calming the storm. And if you remember what she said last week in her sermon, there are actually a lot of parallels between her story and why are you afraid. With this story that I'll be going through this morning, which the emphasis is, what is your name? Okay, so in the previous story, it's about Jesus calming the storm. And this story is a lot about Jesus calming the storm within a person. Okay, so I'll talk a little bit more about that. But first, let's go through this passage this morning. And if you have your Bibles with you, feel free to turn to Mark 5, chapter 1, verse 20. Sorry, chapter 5, verses 1 to 20. And I'll also flash it up here. I found some cool stickman illustrations. Okay, to go with that. Okay, so Mark chapter 5 says, they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tomb a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. Verse 6, and when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For he was saying to him, cut off the man, you unclean spirit. And Jesus asked him, what is your name? He replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Verse 11, now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on a hillside, and they begged him, saying, send us to the pigs, let us enter them. So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herds, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who have seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from the region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him, and he did not permit him. But he said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. This morning, I will just maybe expound a little bit about our passage and hopefully help you to understand this passage a little bit more. And then I will share a little bit of reflection on this passage. So I divided it into four sections. And the first section is about the passage that talks about this man with this unclean spirit. And the second section will be talking about the confrontation between Jesus and the unclean spirit. And in the third section, I'll talk a little bit about the herdsmen and those who have heard what had happened and their reactions. And the fourth section is about the man who was now set free from the unclean spirit. So if we looked into verse 1 to verse 5, this section talks about the man with an unclean spirit. And it says that Jesus and his disciples came to the other side of the sea, okay? And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately they met him out of the tombs, a man with this unclean spirit. And as I mentioned before, Reverend Alexa spoke about how Jesus calmed the storm. And in here, Jesus now meets a man with a violent storm inside him. And it says, and so verse 3 and to verse 5 describes about what was happening with this man. All right, and this talks about this man who had the unclean spirit. The Gospel of Mark alone gives us this vivid account of this man's condition and how he had been treated. This description reveals that he is as storm-tossed by the demons as the disciples in the boat had been as well. So verse 3 says, he lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. This man was described negatively in three ways. Firstly, he lived among the tombs. Even in life, he is consigned to the land of the dead. Tombs were frequently located in caves in those times, and they were known as places or haunts for demons. So he lived where no one else lived, but he lived among the demons. Secondly, the second negative thing that was described about this man was that he could no longer be bound by chains and shackles, and no one could subdue him. The fierce strength of this demon-possessed man is stated in verse 5. No one had the strength to subdue or to tame him. The Greek word used here is called demazo, and it's usually used for taming a wild animal, and it is therefore better translated. No one was able to tame him. And obviously, this demon-possessed man roamed free because all attempts to constrain him have failed. He is a tough person, and only a power that's more potent than iron and chains will be able to contain him. So translating this word to tame also brings out another aspect of the text. It strikes us that something is wrong with this man. One does not normally tame human beings. In James 5, 3, verse 8, James tells people to tame the tongue. But in this case, it is used for a man. And one usually only tames wild animals. And it is obvious in the way how the verses say people around him treated him. People treated him like a wild animal. And he also acts like one. So as I mentioned, he is described as negatively as living in tombs. And secondly, he was not able to be bound or subdued or tamed by anyone. And that's how this man was described. Thirdly, he was crying out and cutting himself with stones day and night. This man is banished as an outcast from society, and he must dwell with those who are dead. And so that his cries echoing through the night as he cuts himself up with stones is not heard. He is condemned to live out his days among decaying bones of the dead, with no one who loves him and no one to love. This man fits the four characteristics of madness found in rabbinic literature in those days. The first says that normally mad people run around at night. Secondly, they stay overnight in burial places. Thirdly, they tear apart one's clothing. And fourthly, they destroy what has been given. And one commentary states, the description of this man, the demoniac, in verse 2 to 5 is actually one of the most lamentable stories of human wretchedness in the Bible. So verse 1 to 5 talks about this man and his state as he lived or was possessed by this unclean spirit. We move to the next section, which talks about this confrontation that now happens between Jesus and the unclean spirit. Verse 6 says, when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For he was saying to him, come out of the man, you evil spirit, you unclean spirit. Now, this may not be so apparent to us as we read these verses, but the book of Mark, when he wrote it, this framework and the way he wrote it implied that the demonic power is actually trying to stop Jesus from entering the region. The story before that talks about the storm implies that the storm was trying to capsize the boat. And now, this demon-possessed man, who's powerful enough to break irons, he now heads towards Jesus and the disciples. This is a place that no one wants to go for any reason, if you were sane. Contrary to all reason, however, Jesus himself and his disciples goes there. Jesus looks past the uncleanness of this man and the formidable reputation of his as well. And apparently, Jesus himself started telling the evil spirit to come out of the man, which meets now with evasive tactics. The unclean spirits recognize Jesus' divine origin, and they quake in his presence. They know they are facing a vastly superior power. The unclean spirits try evasive tactics by first prostrating himself and falling down before Jesus. Whether this action is a counterfeit worship or submission, the evil spirits employ some sort of subterfuge to persuade Jesus to leave them alone. The man in their clutches cried out in a loud voice, "What will you have to do with me?" and attempts to control Jesus by pronouncing his name, Jesus, Son of the Most High God. And it was assumed in those days that one had power over others when one knew their name. So when they abjured Jesus by the name of God, not to torment and to presumably destroy them, although they had tormented this man past his endurance, they now invoke the name of Jesus to keep the Son of God off their back and to protect themselves. And what was Jesus' response? And Jesus responded by saying, "What is your name?" And they responded, "My name is Legion, for we are many." So instead of giving a name, the unclean spirit now gives a number, which is Legion. And Legion in those days was a term used for the largest troop unit in the Roman army, consisting usually of 5,400 foot soldiers and 120 horsemen. So this man was possessed by an army of demons. The demoniac, or the unclean spirits, is not a split personality, but a multiple or shattered personality equal to a number of a Roman legion occupying him. Now, to ancient Hebrews and Babylonians, nothing existed until it had a name, and this name expressed the character. And so if a parent named a child Grace, they actually expected the child to be graceful. So in some sense, though legion is a number, it reflected the militant character of this unclean spirit and reminded Jesus of the number, the power, and the intention of the demons. And interestingly, verse 10 says, "And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country." So the unclean spirits not only was trying to evade Jesus from tormenting them, and they also asked him not to send them out of the country. Now, the unclean spirits were worried about being forced to leave their familiar surroundings. It would make sense from a Jewish perspective, this statement, because demons were at home in this. They felt that demons were at home in this pagan setting. Remember, I told you that most of the time, demons stayed in tombs, right, in the area where tombs were. And so they perceived it as their territory. But Jesus will shortly remind us that the kingdom of God is here to cover the whole earth. So it says in verse 11, "Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, 'Send us to the pigs, let us enter them.' And he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea." So the demons now beg Jesus to send them among the pigs. Ancients understood that demons wanted to always inhabit something rather than wander around aimlessly. Some were thought to be land demons, and they would be then destroyed in water. And there were also demons that lived in water. But it was popular belief in the first century that they just did not like wandering about. And they just abhorred being a vacuum and always wanted to be in something. So for them, a human host was always best. And if they could not have that, then the bunch of pigs nearby seems like a good choice. And anything was better wandering in dry places without a body to host them. So the evil spirits requested now to be sent to this enormously large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside. Now Jesus seems to be gracious in granting their request, but it leads to a surprise ending. The demons usually try to destroy whatever they inhabit and never leaves their victims quietly. And this is also found in Mark 26 and 9, verse 26. So when Jesus grants the demons' request to enter into the pigs, these normally very unheard, they don't normally go around a herd like animals, they now stampede down the bank and into the waters where Jesus had just demonstrated his dominion in the previous story. This text assumes that both animals and demons are destroyed in the sea. So where Jesus had just demonstrated his dominion over the sea in the previous passage, he does not need to know these names of the evil spirit to drive them out, which was very unusual, because if you read anything about exorcism in the New Testament times, that usually had to go through a lot of steps in order to cast out a demon. But Jesus just simply gave them permission. and they went out of the man into the pigs, just based on the authoritative word of Jesus. And with Jesus, there's no need for elaborate protocol, nor is the exorcism dependent on what words to use or what he says, which is why probably scriptures never recorded what he said. They just said he gave them permission. And the power to prevail over the demon resides in Jesus himself. And he speaks, and the demons are expelled. And this was really, really unusual for New Testament times. And now this enormously large herd of 2,000 pigs, and we see the result, is that it ends in their death. Now this large herd of 2,000 pigs must have belonged to a group of swine cooperative, and that continues to mark that this area is a pagan area for Isaiah lumps pork eaters, tomb dwellers, and demon worshippers together. So we see two out of three of these elements in this story. Now, just curious, I was trying to Google how much a pig cost, right? Interestingly, I think a pig costs about 500 or more, but it actually overseas, it can cost a lot more, far more for overseas cost. But roughly, if a pig costs about 500 ringgit, then about 2,000 pigs times 500 ringgit cost about actually 1 million. And so this shows you how much, perhaps, how much Jesus valued the life of this demon-possessed man. You know, 2,000 pigs represented really an enormous livelihood, and their loss was really an economic catastrophe for that region. The good done to the demoniac results actually in the great misfortune for the swine herds or the herdsmen mentioned in this story. And as it stands, this story directs the undivided attention to the rescue of one man from a tragic and torturous fate. In fact, this story says that perhaps if the demon continued to reside in this man, it would have caused destruction. After all, he destroyed 2,000 pigs. So while some of us today may say, oh, you know, creation care and pigs dying are a big issue, I think this story was about emphasizing that to Jesus, the rescue and restoration of this one person was actually more important than vast capital assets. And compared to the redemption of one human being, the loss of the swine or the herdsman, considerable though it was, does not even rate mentioning. So actually, most of us may miss the implication of what this 2,000, the loss of this 2,000 pigs meant. What was the reaction of the herdsmen and those who actually heard what happened? And we now move into this third section. So it says then, and they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, and he's now sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And interestingly, they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. This section of the story centers on the locals' reaction to the exorcism. The herdsmen reported it, both in the city and the country, and the report summons people from this area to see what happened. As they see something quite astounding, this infamous demoniac is in wholly an altered state. He is sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. That is a picture of discipleship and salvation, and a restored individual sitting at the feet of Jesus. But the townsfolk or the townspeople's response to the man's reaction is very surprising. See, when the community arrives, they are not actually frightened by what happened to the pigs, but by seeing this man now clothed and in his right mind, that kind of doesn't make sense. They do not seem to rejoice at this man's recovery, but instead, they are afraid. What is so scary about this person sitting, about seeing a person sitting at the feet of Jesus? You know, the community had desperately tried to tame this demon-possessed man with chains and fetters and shackles, and to no avail. But now Jesus frees him from the chains of the demons with just a word. In a similar way, in the story of Jesus stilling the storm, Jesus' disciples expressed fear at Jesus' manifestation of his great power in stilling the storm. And they wondered, who is this one who is with them? Now, this townspeople, in the same way as the disciples, did not seem to care that Jesus had such power. They just now want him gone. The demons begged Jesus to let them stay in the region, right? But the townspeople, interestingly, asked Jesus to leave. They seem to be more comfortable with the evil forces that takes captive of human beings and destroy animals than they are with the one who can remove them. They can seem to cope with having the demon-possessed man in their community, even though it's in the tombs away from them, and who terrorizes the neighborhood with violence. But they want to keep someone with Jesus' power away, far, far away, to the other side of the sea. And somehow they must consider Jesus more dangerous and worrisome than the demons. The parallel healing of the demon-possessed man with the stilling of the storm is now wholly apparent. Both stories end in fear. At the crossing of the lake, the disciples were more terrified of Jesus' power to still the storm than the storm itself. Here, the inhabitants are more afraid by Jesus' power to remove the demons than the terrifying demon himself. So the residents of the Decapolis seems to resent Jesus' intrusion into their region and ask him to leave. Such is sometimes the response of the human heart to Jesus. Most people, if we were asked, maybe probably would say that they would like to see God himself. But this story sometimes brings another reality to this desire. When God manifests himself in Jesus, there are times when people ask him to leave. As Jesus had granted the request of the demons to send them into the pigs, he now also grants the request of the community to leave them. They do not recognize the help that Jesus offers and do not invite him to stay or to bring their sick and demonized to him. They chase instead away their source of deliverance and salvation. And it seems that people can tolerate religion as long as it does not affect their business profits. As I mentioned, there's a clear also parallel in the outcomes of this story, and the story of Jesus calming the storm. The composure of the healed demon-possessed man, he is now dressed in his right mind, is also a parallel to the great calm in the lake after the storm. The both outer and inner storms have now been stilled by the authority of Jesus. And this story reminds us that Jesus can continue to bring creation out of chaos. In the fourth section, the fourth section talks about the man who was now free, set free from the unclean spirit. And as he was getting into the boat, verse 18, the man who was possessed with the demons begged him that he might be with him, and he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home now to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. The story now focuses back on this man who's now been set free from the unclean spirits. He asked Jesus to be with him, if he could be with him. And this request is worded in the vocabulary of discipleship, indicating his wish to join Jesus. Interestingly, remember Jesus agreed to the request of the demons to be cast in the pigs, and he agreed to the request of the people of this region to leave. But Jesus now declines this request of the man who was freed. It is the only request that Jesus does not grant in this story. And the reason Jesus sends the man away is because he wanted him to announce about how much the Lord had done for him. And it has to do with the fact that Jesus was banished from the region. So Jesus told him to go home to his friends and family and tell much how much the Lord has done for him and how the Lord has had mercy on this man. This banishment of Jesus from the people who told him to leave does not actually rid them of Jesus, for Jesus is present in the message of the now healed man. And so, with the fact that the man actually went and told how much Jesus had done for him, this man now becomes the first missionary preacher sent out by Jesus. He is now a Gentile. He is the first Gentile to the Gentiles, stated in the Gospel of Mark. As stated, and the result is that all who heard him was amazed and they marveled and got to know Jesus, even though Jesus himself has left. What can we learn from this today? And I want to go back to the question this morning. What is your name? And what is our response? And I find that there are three main responses that we can have. Right? Firstly, are we like the demon-possessed man or the demon that called himself Legion? Whether it is living in shame or living in isolation, abused by others around him, wrestling with many voices or with the inner demons or with actual demon possession. This man was inflicted with hurts, both physical and inner torment, and he was feeling separated from his community. Some of us may identify ourselves with this man or know of others who also identify themselves with this demon-possessed man. We may see a mirror of ourselves or others in this disturbed man. He was beaten down by others, divided against himself, had a civil war raging in him, and living among the tombs where no one wanted to go and feeling all alone. A commentator, Lowry, says this, I feel like 6,000 soldiers inside me. Sometimes they all march left and sometimes right, sometimes in all different directions. I'm pulled one way, then another. There's an army inside me, and I think I'm losing the war. And whether it is someone we know or us, this man lives in a state that needs deliverance that comes from Jesus alone. And this is person number one. The next person that I would like to talk about is the herdsmen, or the people who herd. They are a community that seems to resist supernatural power. This group represents someone who is indifferent to the restoration of a person. Do we isolate or drive away those who need redemption or restoration, whether it's because we are ashamed of them or look down on them or because we feel we cannot control them? Do we label broken people as dangerous and someone to be pushed away or someone to be shunned? Do we value money or profits more than a person? This describes the herdsmen or the people who heard, the people who knew the demon-possessed man. They were afraid of Jesus when they saw him healing the demon-possessed man. They drove Jesus away because they feared what he could do. Are we like the herdsmen or the people who heard? And what is your name? Or are we like the man who is now healed? This man is a man who is set free from the demons that was within him. He has a longing to be with Jesus and understands Jesus' command to share him with his friends and his family about God's mercy in his life. He understands his purpose is not for himself, but to glorify God and live in such a way that reflects Jesus' presence in his community. About 2 weeks ago, I went for a health checkup to partly prepare for the ship. And partly, some people told me I look a bit pale or yellow. And also partly because I've also been feeling tired for some time. I thought it was post-COVID. And while when I went for the checkup, everything else seemed was fine on my results. However, the doctor took a look at my blood results and said I had anemia. And my hemoglobin levels were so low that morning that it was at life-threatening level. I felt like I was living in a bit of a drama. As she told me that, I think you need to go for emergency ward right now. Now, whether this hospital or another hospital. She said, actually, if I could drive you, I would take you there. And I was a bit taken aback by her reaction. And so she was saying that, do I feel dizzy? Do I feel tired? I said, yeah, I feel tired, but I felt fine. Or at least I felt, I wasn't dizzy. And so she said, no, look, I needed to go into an emergency ward. I half thought she was kidding because I was, still walking around and talking. And she said, oh, and I needed to get a blood transfusion immediately. And so I called my sister. My sister came and picked me up, and we went to another hospital and checked myself in emergency, and I thought that, it'll be fine, and I was a bit surprised when, so I walked into an emergency ward, and the guy looked at me, and he's like, oh, what's wrong with you? and I half thought that, the first doctor was kind of exaggerating, and I passed him my results and the reference from the doctor, and he immediately brought out a bed and said, I think you better lie down. And I was like, what? Okay. Immediately, they did a number of tests the whole day, and then after that, by evening, I had a blood transfusion twice. And basically, it was to really increase my hemoglobin levels that was very low, and thankfully I was checked out by the next day as they were happy that my hemoglobin levels went up again. At the moment, I'm still recovering and I'm taking a lot of iron tablets, basically that, and making decisions about the cause, about anemia. But as I read this story and prepare for this sermon, I really see God's hand on my life. As I realized I could have collapsed or gotten into a back accident or even died if I was not caught, if this was not caught on my health, if I delayed my health screening. So medical staff that day actually kept on asking me, actually, why did you come in if you felt fine? Or why did you actually go for your health check? And they said if I were to not check for another week or two, they thought I would have collapsed based on that level. And so when I look back, I really see that God assures me that His work in me is still not done, and He continues to remind me that I continue not to live for my own purposes, but His. And as I mentioned, as I prepare for the ship, I may sometimes struggle that I have to go and I've got to stay in a small room, or I've got to stay on a smaller ship, and I've got to do a lot of things that are unknown because I'm starting out the HR for them and doing a number of things that are new with the ship. And God reminds me to not worry or not be anxious. As He takes care of my life, I just have to continue faithfully serve Him. So I pray that as I share this my story with you this morning, that it will encourage you in your own faith journey, that God has also healed you in His way, and God has redeemed you, and that so not that you will live for yourself, but that you too will continue to share about to others about Him and about His work in your life, and how God continues to have mercy on you, just as He has mercy on me. Now all of us may not say, oh, I'm really, my name is like number one. I'm like the demon-possessed man, or I'm like Legion, or I'm number two, or I'm like the third person. Some of us may say, oh, we identify with a mix of these three. But I pray that no matter what we name ourselves, that we remember that we have a God that continues to love us, that values us even more than 2,000 pigs, values us beyond what we think, no matter how broken we may be. He calls us His, and we are His people and His community, and we need to live and share our stories so others know that He still exists and that He lives, and that His work and His mercy continues today. And so I'm going to ask Doreen to lead us in a song that talks about the name of Jesus as we talk about names this morning, to remind us that we have a God whose name is above all names, and His name is a beautiful and wonderful one.
You have been listening to a sermon from PJEFC. We hope that you have been blessed by the message. For more sermons, please go to www.pjefc.org/sermons. Love God, love people, and make disciples.